Good morning. I'm still reporting on the economy. In August 2012, International Monetary Fund researchers Michael Kumhoff and Jeremy Bernays published a paper which confirmed much of what I've been writing about for the past 34 years. The paper was entitled The Chicago Plan Revisited. In the depths of the Great Depression of the 1930s, Professor Irving Fisher of Yale University and several other distinguished professors from the University of Chicago prepared a plan to show President Roosevelt how to get the nation out of the Depression. In 1936, Professor Fisher wrote a little book called 100% Money, which I highly recommend and reprint in its entirety in my book, No More National Debt. When Kumhoff and Bernays' paper first came out, critics said that since it was published by the IMF, it couldn't possibly be true, that it must be some sort of IMF disinformation. But as I have said time after time, everything is not a conspiracy. Anyone who is a legitimate researcher, who takes an honest look at the evidence spanning back thousands of years, cannot help but come to the same conclusion. It's actually pretty simple stuff that anyone can understand. And 100 years from now, people will look back at this era of the debt money monopoly and shake their heads in disbelief, wondering how humanity could have been so stupid as to let banks create our money by lending it to us. It's really unbelievable, but it's true. Last November, Kumhoff gave a talk at the London School of Economics and made some important points. These are so important, I'm going to take them one by one and create a series of short clips from this talk, followed by commentary. First of all, Kumhoff tells his audience that his comments do not represent the official position of the International Monetary Fund.
And as I always have to do with these kinds of presentations, I have to put up the disclaimer. It's particularly relevant here because this paper does not in any way represent an official policy position of the International Monetary Fund. It is research, okay? But we like to have debate, and this certainly has caused debate.
I have been in this exact auditorium at the LSE, and the audience is typically mostly economics professors and their students and leaders of the financial sector. He then explains what brought him to look at the Chicago Plan.
We are currently in a situation where there's a lot of attention to the financial system and its problems, more so than at any time since the Great Depression. But in the Great Depression, there was a similar level of attention to problems in the financial system, and a very large share of the then leading macroeconomists put forward a plan that became known as the Chicago Plan because many of its advocates sat at the University of Chicago.
He then explains how these 1930s economists saw the situation so much more clearly than economists of today do.
When you read the debates that happened during those times and the papers that were written during those times, what struck me, what is really amazing, is that the level of understanding, the depth of understanding of what banking really is, was literally far greater than it is today. I'm not joking, okay? Today we are very much involved in very technical debates about how do we fine-tune the financial supervision with Basel, etc., keeping our existing system intact but making sure it works better. What those guys did in the 1930s was to think about how do we design a system from the ground up where we would not have many of the problems that we have in the first place. What would such a system have to look like? And it was based on an understanding of what banking actually is. And I will argue today that a lot of theorizing that goes on about what banking is today is plain wrong.
Kumhoff then gets right down to his most important point.
That credit cannot be financed by creation of bank deposits ex nihilo, out of thin air, which is exactly how credit is funded today.
Let's be sure we understand just what he said, that credit cannot be financed by creation of bank deposits ex nihilo, out of thin air, which is exactly how credit is funded today. As I have said on this YouTube channel hundreds of times, the main thing people don't understand is that the government in today's world does not create money. Commercial banks create over 90% of the money out of thin air.
The key function of banks today is money creation. It is not intermediation.
What is intermediation? It means only lending out money they actually have.
Banks do not intermediate pre-existing savings. Banks do not wait for granny to walk in through the door and deposit some money so that they can lend it to somebody else. Instead, what banks do is they create new money ex nihilo, out of thin air, in the act of lending. And I emphasize that this is not a theory, this is a fact. In my work, I'm listing many quotes from central bank publications that say so. You just have to look in the right place. What that means is that banks are almost fully in control of the money creation process.
If you take nothing else away from this channel, understand this. The government is not in control of our money. Commercial banks are. This is the greatest misunderstanding people have about money today. The media doesn't understand this, the politicians don't understand it, and even most of the professors either don't understand it or are so dependent on the existing system that they won't teach it to upcoming students. And until we understand this, we cannot ever fix our economic problems. This is nothing less than a private monopoly on the quantity of money in virtually every nation on earth, and ultimately puts banks in control of the governing process as well, and thereby destroys the basic tenet of self-governance, that government operate in the public interest, not in the interest of a small group of designated financial royalty. We are continuing with IMF researcher Michael Kumhoff's presentation at the London School of Economics on his paper entitled The Chicago Plan Revisited. He explained that the Chicago Plan was a plan presented by leading economists to President Franklin Delano Roosevelt during the depths of the Great Depression of the 1930s. Its basic tenet was that banks would no longer get to create money out of thin air every time they make a loan. Under the new system, banks would merely do what most people think banks do today, lend one person's money out to another person. In other words, be the intermediary between savers and borrowers.
Under the Chicago Plan, banks would become intermediaries of sovereign money.
What is sovereign money? Money created by the government without debt, equally for the benefit of all citizens. It is the most important power of a sovereign nation. When banks get to create money, it's called bank money, because banks get to make the profit, or seigniorage, or seigniorage. When nations create the money, as the U.S. did during both the Revolutionary War and the Civil War, that's called sovereign money. So let's take a look at it again.
Under the Chicago Plan, banks would become intermediaries of sovereign money.
So banks could no longer get to create money when they make loans. They could only lend out government-issued money that a saver had deposited in their bank. Sounds fair to me. Issuing sovereign money is actually the solution to all the government's economic problems today. Instead of borrowing money, creating more national debt, we could issue U.S. notes like we did to pay for both the Revolutionary War and the Civil War instead of borrowing. This isn't that hard. In fact, we still do issue one form of sovereign money which we could utilize right away. According to Mr. Kumhoff,
the only sovereign money that we have today is actually coins.
Some of you may remember last October 8th, during the national debt limit debate, that I proposed paying off the entire national debt in quarters instead of borrowing more Federal Reserve money. We don't have to go begging to bankers for loans to make these payments. We can simply pay them off in lawful U.S. coins. So how about quarters? the Treasurer has complete authority to do this without even asking Congress for legislation. A U.S. quarter weighs exactly 1/5 of an ounce, 5 of them to an ounce, 80 of them to a pound, 160,000 of them to a ton. That's $40,000 worth. That's 10.4 million tons of quarters, or about 347,000 tractor trailer loads. Of course, this was not a serious proposal, but it could be. And it is infinitely more practical than borrowing another quarter on our national debt. Why would you borrow when you can create? Mr. Kumhoff explains it in a single sentence.
Money creation would no longer be based on private debt creation.
You see, coins are a very small percentage of the national money supply, less than 3%. All the rest of our money is created not by the government, not by we the people for the public benefit, but 97% of our national money is issued by banks that they simply make up as electronic digits in their computers when they give out loans.
That one major reason why we have so much debt in the economy today is because we have a monetary system that requires us to have debt so that we can have money.
Why are politicians wrong when they tell us that we can gradually start paying down the national debt?
Right now, today, we have a world where if everybody repaid their debts, this economy would grind to a halt because without debt, we don't have money.
So, if we were to start paying down the national debt today, we would actually be destroying money out of the economy because all our money is debt-based. It's simply crazy. Kumhoff then explains how moving over to a debt-free government money system could benefit the entire economy and everyone in it.
So the government has here basically in one step recovered the seigniorage that the banks had previously appropriated themselves by creating money privately. And this is a windfall that the government can then decide how to dispose of. And I'm assuming that in the first step, they're going to, out of that, repay government debt as it falls due.
So it is impossible to gradually pay down the national debt in a private debt money system. Why? Because you destroy the economy, because you destroy its money as you destroy the debt. You can only retire the national debt if you are replacing it with debt-free sovereign money. Then never, ever allow government borrowing again. I'm still reporting on the economy. Good day.